This is the DRF Players Podcast.
This is Peter Thomas Fornital with you for the DRF Players Podcast. Sort of an unusual show this week. I'm sure many of you who follow us on Twitter have seen the news that Mike Hogan is no longer with Daily Racing Form. Mike has been a part of the show since the very beginning. A lot of folks have asked about what happened. You know, these things, they're above my pay grade. All I know is the official word, and that involves words like restructuring and position elimination and all these things that seem like they're a lot more at home in a George Orwell novel than a horse racing podcast. So I don't really know anything about that, but I do know that there'd be no show without Mike Hogan. This is the 226th episode of the DRF Players Podcast. I think Mike was on about 222 of them and was really a driving force not only on the air, but also behind the scenes in making everything happen. Obviously, it's no fun to not have him here. Mike is really somebody who was a beloved ambassador of the brand and really put a lot into bringing the best show possible to everybody. And, you know, I just really want to wish him all the best, and we'll keep track of his future endeavors. If you followed him at DRF Hogan, that should carry over to his new Twitter handle, which I believe is M Hogan Says, at M Hogan Says. And then before we move on, we are going to have a show today. Mike would want us to have a show today, and on the eve of these three big Triple Crown prep races, it seems like to not do a show, which is something we certainly considered. The only real losers would be our regular audience members who tune in. So that didn't seem like the right thing to do. So we're going to do like a little reset here in a second, and then we'll do a regular show today. But I did want to give the last word. As a writer, sometimes you just recognize when somebody else nails it and you can't really contribute anything. So in that case, you just cite and move on. And that's what I'm going to do with our friend Barry Spears, who said on Twitter about Mike Hogan, a truly outstanding professional handicapper in person. I'm lucky to be able to call him a friend. Good luck, my man. That sounds about right to me.
This is the DRF Players Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the April 7th edition of the DRF Players Podcast, show 226, or maybe it's even 227. I got to go back and check that, actually, now that I say it out loud. I think it might be 227. I am joined today, as usual, by Jonathan Kinchin, though Jonathan Kinchin is not calling in from Planet Texas, but is somewhere in a car. I don't know what's going on. Where are you today, JK?
I'm in a Holiday Inn Express in Forest City, Arkansas, traveling from Memphis, Tennessee to Hot Springs for a day at Oaklawn Park. I'm a little bit concerned. Our guest, who I'm sure you'll introduce in a second, if he's, for whatever reason, gets whisked away from the call today, it's because he's being arrested for stealing a waffle from the buffet that he is not staying in a hotel at.
That's some dodgy behavior that I wouldn't expect from a respected guest like the man I'm about to introduce, a member of the Buyer Speed Figure team, great Twitter follow, respected handicapper in general, talking, of course, about Nick Tamro. Nick, are the fuzz on your back? What's happening? I don't hear him. Maybe it all went wrong for Nick. What's going on, JK?
No. I'm here. I was unnecessarily muted, but the world can't mute me for too long. So no, it's a pancake that I may be persevering after pretty soon. We'll see. I'll try and keep it on the down low.
I like it. Yeah, you got to be sly, man. You can't just be stealing things willy nilly from the buffet and expecting to get away with it. But so, Jonathan, you've said on the show many times that as long as there are horses running in a circle, you'd be interested in watching and wagering on said activity. But it turns out maybe you didn't cast a wide enough net in terms of the mammal who's running in a circle. Is that what I understand?
Yeah, no. Yesterday was I broke my maiden at a dog track, and it was a ton of fun. It's different, of course, for obvious reasons, but interesting. And we kind of got the kind of behind the scenes tour yesterday and even this morning of we got to see a greyhound farm, and I was pleasantly surprised from the perception that I might have thought how that whole thing would look and feel. And it surely felt a heck of a lot better than I had always thought it would. And I was impressed. I don't think that I'm going to be making a switch over anytime soon. But I respect the people involved in it. It was, you know, and I was pleasantly surprised.
Nick, did you actually try to handicap any of those races?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I'm not going to pass up on that opportunity one bit. I have a little bit more of a dog racing history than Jonathan, having gone to Gulf Greyhound in Houston and now closed Greyhound track down in Lamarck, Texas. And I've been to what used to be known as Hollywood Greyhound, which I think is Mardi Gras now, just a couple miles north of Gulfstream. So I brought a little bit of knowledge forward. Didn't do me a whole lot of good, which is no surprise. But yeah, much like JK, really enjoyed the experience and seeing being taken around some of the kennels this morning and seeing that though there may be a reputation that some people have, or that dog racing has in some people's opinion, it's basically false. They're very, very well taken care of. It's a real high-class operation. They run at Southland, given the big influx of cash that they have from their casino. And if you were ever in the West Memphis, Arkansas area, I strongly suggest you go by and experience the Saratoga dog tracks.
That's pretty cool. I'm going to be there next week, I guess it is. Maybe I'll have to add that to the itinerary because I, too, am going to be making the Memphis to Hot Springs drive. I hadn't considered it before you said it, but that sounds cool. I do know you can make speed figures for dog races in the Winning Horse Player. A buyer talks about a guy in Florida who used his principles to make figures. And years later, I had the pleasure of randomly meeting that man and hanging out with him, the guy who had written Buyer a letter about this, Kim Isaac Eisler, who's he follows on Twitter. I don't know if he's a podcast listener or not, but Kim, if you're listening, how are you? But any money? Did anybody get rich last night? What happened, JK? You any good betting stories?
No. No, I didn't I wasn't participating too heavily. The biggest wager place was on the Santa Anita Pick Four, which came back $3,300, and I was not involved in. Actually, a Pick Four that was in the midst of the jackpot Pick Six getting hit at Santa Anita, as a matter of fact, for I think $1.1 million is what I saw. So obviously I didn't have the Pick Four in a situation that paid $1.1 million for the Pick Six. So No, I dabbled, but it was more of a just for fun situation.
Nick, tell the listeners why you guys were in Memphis in the first place.
Yeah, we had the opportunity, courtesy of our good friend Marshall Graham, who's a economics professor at Rhodes College, to speak to his second level econ class that he's teaching about the economics of horse racing, which is a second half of the second semester class. And I think this was the sixth or eighth meeting of the class. And he wanted myself and Jonathan and our buddy Travis Stone to come in and guest lecture and talk a little bit about our experiences in racing. The students were incredibly receptive. They've obviously been well-schooled by Dr. Graham in the art, and we're looking to take an opportunity to put it forth at some wherever. When that came at Southland last night, when a number of them tagged along and joined us for a night of dog racing. So it was an absolute blast. Big thanks to Marshall Graham, who will listen to the podcast at some point when we allow him to, after he drives us safely to Hot Springs. And it was a great opportunity. We had a great couple of days. Went to the Grizzlies game Wednesday night and saw Russell Westbrook, and then we saw the Russell Westbrook of economics and horse racing professors.
Fabulous. You know, you guys have just given me a vision in my head. I'm thinking of my daughter Perrin and Rodney Dangerfield and me and the movie Back to School. I think Perrin, I've decided right now on the spot, she's going to Rhodes College, and I'm tagging along with her just because I want to take that class.
That sounds like a plan. I think if we could find a way for Marshall to teach it every year, he would certainly do it as well. I think the reception for it has been amazing. I kind of half expected to see a lot of somewhat, you know, not uninterested kids, but skeptical. And I think there certainly were a few who probably heard me, you know, droning on and on about speed figures and felt like they were, doing no better than being in their English 101 class. But they were receptive enough as time went by, and certainly loved hearing about Jonathan's tournament exploits and Travis's experience as a track announcer, which, when push comes to shove, are far more interesting than speed figures.
But that is a good point about how far-reaching a class that could really be, not only in terms of the financial implications of the market of horse racing, but also all the different jobs within the industry and ways that one can participate, whether it's on the broadcasting side, like Travis on the back end, essentially with the data work that you do, Nick, or of course, JK as a little bit of a toe in the door in broadcasting through this podcast, of course, but also through the success he's had in tournaments. It sounds really cool. And please thank your chauffeur for me. And thank him also, and thank all of you guys for doing a headstand, basically, to be able to participate on the show this morning. I've had a rough week, as you might have guessed if you listened to the open, and really appreciate the fact of you guys going out of your way to be on today's show, because it is a big one. We do have the final three big preps for the Kentucky Derby coming up. We are going to be talking about all three of those races. We're going to be doing a somewhat shorter show today. I've got to hop because I'm doing a Wood Memorial preview show at 11 for those of you listening live. Going to be with Mike Beer. That's going to be a lot of fun as well. So we have about half an hour, a little less, to talk about these three races. We also have some questions that came in. We'll get to those if we have time. And hopefully we will have time because they're both time-sensitive questions. But let's start off talking about that race we just mentioned, the Wood Memorial. Nick Tamaro, this is a race, I take it, I'm going to guess that you are, this is a race that has some special meaning to you as a guy who handicaps New York every day, year in, year out.
Yeah, definitely. I think Wood Memorial has always been kind of the, I think I mentioned a month or so ago regarding the Gotham, that you kind of felt like that was the race that ended your winter slumber. And when you get to Wood Memorial Day, you see a couple of races carded for the turf, which I think it's a little unclear whether those races will actually be on the turf, but still it shows that brighter days are on the horizon and big races are coming also. This is the first grade two running of the Wood Memorial in quite some time, and hopefully won't be it'll be back to where it belongs relatively soon. I think the difference between, and we'll obviously talk about all three, but the difference between a race like the Bluegrass and the Wood is that there are some more proven commodities down in Kentucky, but there are horses with real potential in the Wood that feel like they may be moving in the right direction and now are going to take the opportunity to stamp themselves as real contenders. And I think when you're having that conversation, you're talking about Battalion Runner, who was a winner of a one other than at Gulfstream, and Cloud Computing, who ran a great second in the Gotham in his second career start. So, and then, of course, the rebound candidates, Motown and Irish Warcry. So it brings together a interesting group that all of which have shown at some point they could potentially be at the level that you need to be in order to win a race like the Woods.
There's, I don't know if it's a typo or an editorial comment, but I did notice when I went into DRF Formulator and printed out my past performances for the Wood, it is still listed as a grade one in there. I don't know. I'm not sure which side of the fence that one falls on. For me, I'm sort of hoping it's an editorial comment. And as you say, Nick, we get back to where we need to be. You mentioned the idea of those bounce back runners. That's a theme that's going to be coming up in all these races. JK, let me ask you, when you're looking at the final prep race for the Triple Crown series, do you have any sort of general rules in your head as to when you're apt to forgive a seeming non-effort in the previous race versus where you're going to take that form more literally and shy away from those horses coming off of bad efforts?
Well, it's a little preview to my selection. I'm picking a bounce back horse. So, I think that you have to in racing is understand why something happened, be willing to forgive a horse for a performance, especially when that horse is going to present some value. You know, I think Cloud Computing is going to take a lot of money in this spot, being Chad. Battalion Runner is going to take a lot of money in this spot. And I think some other horses that have a lot of ability and can be forgiven for a previous performance are going to present a lot of value.
I can't get off of Cloud Computing myself. I mean, this is a horse that right after the debut we talked about as one who had the potential to win a graded stakes for Chad Brown, as he was once sort of tongue-in-cheek referred to for patient turf trainer Chad Brown, to have as aggressive a program as he's put together for Cloud Computing. That tells me something. I think you can certainly conjure a reason why the last effort was maybe even better than it looked when you take a look at the way that race unfolded. And his being so close to the early pace, I could see him settling down second time off the stretch out. That's where my money is going in the main. JK, let's keep it with you. Who is your selection?
Yeah, I couldn't get away from Irish War Cry. I wanted to pick Battalion Runner, but I just didn't feel like the horse was fast enough on figures in terms of, like, you know, time form or whatever, you know, and had easy leads. I wanted Cloud Computing, but I just think the horse is going to be bet off the board, and so I'm going to give Irish War Cry another shot. You know, the race that Irish War Cry ran at Gulfstream, two back in the Holy Bull, I was impressive, and yeah, obviously that horse got, you know, got things his own way that time, and why a lot of us were playing against him in the Fountain of Youth. However, they went pretty quickly in the Fountain of Youth. They're adding distance. It's a horse, you know, it's a curling. You like to expect that he's going to excel as they get a little bit further along. And something that you said a lot, Pete, that I've picked up on is a lot of times with these trainers, when there's moves I'm not sure about, I trust them, right? I trust that Graham Motion would not be forcing this horse into this spot if he didn't feel like there was a reason why the horse would improve. And Rajiv, I think, is probably hungry to get back to the main stage, and I think that we'll get a good trip from him. And so my selection is going to be Irish War Cry.
It is interesting to see that last workout for Irish War Cry back at Fair Hill. You could conjure a world in which being back at the home base, maybe he's going to be in a little bit of a better position to show his form. But it is a little hard. It's a little daunting to see that 63 buyer speed figure from the last race, especially if you accept the fact that the high figure from two back probably was as much a question of a race shape that favored him as anything else. Where do you stand on Irish War Cry, Nick?
No, the interesting thing about the race and that I alluded to is that you do have these two horses that are trying to rebound from questionable performances. And you know, the concern that I have about Irish War Cry's performance is that there is no discernible excuse whatsoever. And I think it's a slippery slope in racing of going down the too bad to be believed path. And I think that's kind of where you land with Irish War Cry. So it just makes me nervous that an otherwise pretty, you know, solid horse that was training well would run so poorly. So I will use him defensively. He will not be the focus of my attention, wagering wise. And to be honest, I would actually take Motown before I would take him from a wagering perspective, in part because Motown's last race was off a layoff. I'm very concerned with how poorly he ran and wondering if maybe that's just a harbinger of things to come. And if he wasn't a 2-year-old, maybe that was a little ahead of the curve and that they've caught up to him. But I feel like I can make a little bit of an excuse for that effort. I can't make any excuse for Irish War Cry. I'm going to drink the Kool-Aid and take Cloud Computing in here, because to me, when the Chad Brown horse, just like you said, Pete, runs that well on debut, comes back and runs an improved race at second asking, looks like a mile and an eighth won't be a problem based on that damn side pedigree and the way he finished last time, I'm going to take that gamble.
I wrote a little piece for the Derby Countdown Guide that's available to DRF Plus members on DRF.com, and I pointed out that Graham Motion in the post-race interviews and the subsequent interviews since the Fountain of Youth sort of broke into the Trainer Excuse Hall of Fame with some of the ones he was busting out. He actually mentioned the track being cuppy. In the history of horse racing, I'm not sure that there's ever been one horse that liked a cuppy track, to recycle, I think, a Andy Beyer or Mike Watchmaker line. He mentioned the possibility of a bounce, all these things. It seemed pretty clear he didn't know either. We'll see what happens with the home cooking. He'll be certainly a backup for me. More interested in Cloud Computing in there myself. Nobody picking a Battalion Runner? What do we, Nick, where do you stand with him?
You know, I'm glad you brought him up, and I actually wanted to say this before we moved on to a different race, but I'll tell you, one of the things that worries me about Battalion Runner is that Todd has called all of these audibles in the last couple of weeks. And I feel like when he's definitive with what he wants to do, he generally is, and it's a good sign. You know, he brought up sending Battalion Runner out to the Santa Anita Derby, then he, you know, rerouted him to the Wood, maybe when the picture became clearer in terms of what he was going to do with a horse like One Liner. It feels like he's a backup type for Todd Pletcher as well. And so I don't, you know, I didn't really love the race he ran against Beasley. I don't want to get caught up in the race that he ran with a relatively slow pace at 7 furlongs the time before. These are the kind of horses that maybe peak a little early and start to go the wrong direction for this barn. So certainly as the favorite, I'm going to look for alternatives and would rather use as my main horses Motown and Cloud Computing.
Makes sense. JK, any final thoughts on the Wood Memorial before we turn it to the Bluegrass?
No, I'm ready. Let's roll.
All right. Well, of course, we have today Keeneland opening day, along with opening day of the baseball season, two of my favorite days of the spring. Going to definitely be getting involved in the Keeneland meet this year. Going to be fortunate enough to head down there for their contest in a few weeks, which is always a good time. And I'm going to try to circle as an annual event on my calendar. Early in the meet, the Bluegrass, one of the signature races for Keeneland. JK, we'll keep it with you. Where are you going in here?
Well, one of the places I'm not going to go is J-Boy's Echo. I thought that horse got a big setup last time. It's on the good part of the track. Look, I was bullish about McCracken until I watched the replay of McCracken and Tappert's last race in the Sam F. Davis. I'm still bullish on McCracken, but I'm a little bit more hesitant because Tappert actually ran pretty darn well in that race and galloped out well. I think McCracken's going to be the Derby favorite based on the performance he's going to put in tomorrow. It's really not a clever idea. I do think Wild Shot's going to be overbet because a lot of people are going to think that horse is going to be loose. And Time Form has that horse. The Pace Projector has him loose on a pace that should favor a horse that's close. And so I think he's going to be overbet. I mean, look, he's 15-1, but I think he's going to be bet down to, 10, 8-1, which I think is probably a little bit too low. But McCracken for me, nothing clever here. I look forward to him running well here and setting himself up for the first Saturday in May.
I'm sort of with you, JK. McCracken, in the super look I wrote, I said lots of nice things about him. Of course, there's the question about the mistraining, and we have to see what happens there. But based on what we're seeing in the work tab lately, I expect to see his really good race. And with the time he missed, I almost expect that means they'll be that much more inclined to have him have an effort that will be a winning effort as opposed to the good second you might have expected had he had another good prep before this. Tappert, the other one that I'd be interested in at the A level. Let's ask Nick this question. We've talked about it a lot on the show. Seems like there was a lot of debate about the trip that Tappert had when he was running against McCracken in the Sam Davis. Sounds like JK is with me that the trouble he had getting a run in the stretch, the way he galloped out, how relatively the pace figures he ran early in that race, all these things suggested to me a horse whose race was probably a bit better than it looked. I don't know that he's as good as McCracken, but I think he's closer than the margin of victory at the end suggested, and the margin of victory wasn't all that much. Are we overblowing this trip, Nick, or are we on to something talking about Tappert and the Davis?
I think you're onto something in saying that it's worth remembering. It's worth the footnoting about the race itself. I don't think it kept him from winning, but I also don't think the trips you should document and consider moving forward should be the ones only that keep a horse from winning. I think a lot of times it's that hidden trip that maybe keeps a horse from having a clear run or, getting an opportunity to do something that they otherwise did not, that you really want to focus on. So I didn't think it was ideal. It was a little odd. He kind of ran in spots and got himself moved. He moved up on the backstretch. He moved up around the turn. He kind of lost position. Then he rallied outside. It seems as if both horse and rider were a little bit more confident, were a little bit more polished at Tampa Bay Downs. The real question that is going to be answered here and probably again in 4 weeks or so is if this horse can run well outside of Florida. And look, let's be honest, these Todd Pletcher horses don't run as well outside of Florida as they do down there. And when one of them finally does come up to Kentucky or goes elsewhere and runs a big race on the Triple Crown Trail, then I'll be a little bit more convinced because, this horse, I'm not going to hold a late in the maiden race at Saratoga against him, but quite honestly, he was only good enough to go down to Calder in November. So he wasn't exactly one of Todd's blue chip prospects. He's quickly come to hand. I still feel like this is a little prep-ish for him and they don't really need it. They're just doing it to get another race into him before the Derby. I think McCracken is clearly the now horse. He's a horse who needs this race and I think will run well based on the way he's been training. I would also like to see him take a bit of a step forward too from a speed figure perspective and back up all of this credit that he's getting from the general public. I'm with Jonathan on J-Boy's Echo. I think last time was the time. I think he was with the grain of the track that day and also got a favorable pace set up. I'm going to be willing to give Wild Shot a little bit of a chance because it seems like he'll get a favorable trip pace-wise. That, to me, is more so because he got kind of a ridiculous ride in the Tampa Derby. He was never supposed to be that far out of it. He also made a decent middle move into Sam Davis before flattening out a little bit late. So there are some things to like there, and I think he'll get a fair enough price also. So moving along in terms of contenders, Practical Joke to me is a horse that's ultimately going to need to be cut back. I'm expecting this distance to be a little bit too much for him, and look forward to getting a chance to bet him at 7/8 relatively soon.
All right, good thoughts there. I think we covered basically everything we need to. I'll just chime in that you mentioned about the distance concerns for Practical Joke. That's sort of how I feel about Wild Shot, just from losing ground in the lane. But I suppose that many a pace scenario has made a horse go a little bit farther than they seem like they might want to on paper. Is that part of your mild case for at least using Wild Shot as a backup, Nick?
Exactly, yeah.
Beautiful.
Yep.
All right, let's move out to the West Coast and the Santa Anita Derby. This is one where I need to rely more on you guys. I spent so much time looking at those first two races and doing the handicapping for these webinars this weekend that I haven't done the deep dive yet on the Santa Anita Derby, and I'm running out of time. So maybe you guys can help coach me up. Nick, this time we'll start with you. Where's your money going in the Grade 1 Santa Anita Derby?
You know, it almost feels like with the way Mastery won the San Felipe and what's left, really what was left in his wake afterwards and what's gathered together for this Santa Anita Derby, it's almost like the sport where the players are on strike and you're dealing with replacement players. Like this is the B-team brigade that we're dealing with in the Santa Anita Derby, and it is not a race, I think, with a whole ton of depth or really accomplished individuals. And I say that not in an effort to demean California Racing by any means, but it feels like the best horse in the race might be Iliad, and I'm not really sure he wants to go much beyond a mile. I also don't want to hold a good second place finish behind Mastery against him, given that he did have to do some running in the middle to keep up with him while Gormley took a back seat. So, you know, in terms of who I want to bet, I kind of am almost inclined to take a bit of a stranger, like a horse like Kim Bear or somebody that's going to offer a little bit of value, because the proven horses there are such huge question marks with. You know, you hear apparently that American Anthem didn't take to the Oakland Park surface. So in the history of Bob Baffert's barn, he's the only horse who didn't take to Oakland. You know, it's just unbelievable to try and believe something like that. So, and it's really, that's a redundancy from the Department of Redundancy Department. You know, and then
I was going to let you get away with
the
just
world. And I think, I got to be on point. You have to reach the world battle of midway race, which I think Jonathan will talk about. He looks at it much more favorably than I do. I thought it was a slow race with a couple of horses that are very overhyped because of their connections. And I didn't really care for the race that either of them won. I reached the world kind of a big gangly tappet that was inside and outside and in spots and looking to make a rally. And he kind of ran okay. And I don't know. I'm just not over the moon with any of them. So I'd rather take a stranger and or not assume that a horse like American Anthem will bounce back.
Let's talk about Kim Bear, who you mentioned, Nick. What are you seeing? What are you seeing to recommend there? Do you just think he shapes like a horse who might improve with the added ground? Where's the love coming from?
Yeah, I think it's going to be one that where he'll improve with added ground. I feel like it was time last time for him. He was put into the race a little bit more. He ran a vastly improved race. I will completely admit that it's a bit of a Thoroughbred type play too, in that he matched his dirt figure from Los Alamitos in December. Feels like he might be a bit of a progressive type, and you know, he'll be 15-1 or so in a race where the favorites just all have a bit of an odor to them.
Yeah, I get it. JK, where did you end up in the Santa Anita Derby?
Yeah, it's tough. I talking about American Anthem, I wanted that to be my Derby horse, and then he gave me nothing at Oaklawn, and it's not encouraging. I know that you know, Baffert points for that race and his record in that race and the success he's had in that race. It's not a prep situation. So the fact that he ran so poorly was really discouraging. So I'm going to look away from him. I hope he runs well. But for me, I'm interested in Battle of Midway. And I understand where Nick's coming from in terms of the horse not seeming to be as fast as you would like to see on paper. Timeform US gave the horse a 107 in his last start. The last two starts were, you know, he was wide both turns. Or in most parts of the race, and so I would expect that, you know, especially at Santa Anita where the inside and speed does so well, that horse could improve off of that. Obviously, trust Jerry Hollendorfer, and I've always thought Corey Nakatani is a really good rider, can really finish races, and so I'm looking forward to seeing that. 5-1 is not ideal, however, I think he might creep up a little bit from there. I think Reach the World will probably get bet, and I think Battle of Midway will be my play in that spot.
Yeah, 84, not exactly a great buyer speed figure for a first level allowance for 3-year-olds in March. I mean, when you look at like what a horse like Cloud Computing did just in his maiden race, I definitely I'm sympathetic to both of your points of view. I see what Nick is saying about based on the speed figure of the race, maybe those are horses to take on at these shorter type prices. But I also get it, looking at the overall composition of the field, JK, how you could be a little bit more forgiving. We'll know a lot more about 6:30 Eastern time on Saturday. Hey guys, how cool is it that the three races we just discussed are actually going to be happening? It seems like within about a 30 to 40 minute window, and none are scheduled on top of each other. It's almost like the powers that be in horse racing got together and coordinated something.
Well, you know what happened, Pete? The championship meet ended.
Our friends at Gulfstream?
Yes, so there will be no overlap. There will be no 10-minute circles behind the gate tomorrow in hopes. I know that won't happen at Keeneland. It won't happen at Aqueduct. And they don't really do much of it at Santa Anita. So without being too disparaging of some of the partners in racing, I'll say that it will be nice to see a little bit of cooperation and races go off when people can actually watch all of them without having to split their screen.
Naira does an amazing job with getting races off on time. I'm consistently impressed with it. And they're actually the next thing I want to talk about, because I have a contest question for you guys that came in over the transom. Unfortunately, the folks listening to this, there's apparently, for whatever reason, no walk-up to this contest, which I don't get at all. I feel like there should be walk-ups with cash, but for whatever reason, that is not that is not the case. So if you're not already signed up for this Naira contest, I don't think you're going to be able to play in it. You can ask. Maybe they're going to change the rules late. That does happen sometimes. But this is a $500 live bank contest. $300 is the live bank. $200 funds the prize pool. Win, place, show, exacta, and trifecta. And we had a couple of people asking about possible strategies for that format. I think there are, I'm just going to make up these part of the rules, but it's going to be close to this. Something like you have to bet 10 races, at least five from the home track. Jonathan, what are your thoughts? How would you approach strategically a contest like this?
Yeah, well, I mean, in just to keep in mind about Naira contests, this is something I learned a long time ago. If they let you bet more than one track, I'm pretty sure there's a rule, just double check it. You have to always make sure that you bet more at the home track than you do at the other tracks. Even if you make the requirements, I've heard a lot of bad stories about people missing that rule, and I just wanted to remind those participating. You know, for me, I don't really go in with very many strategies to situations like that. I you know, we talk about it all the time. I let the card determine my strategy. I let my opinion determine my strategy. I don't let my strategy, like, take over how I'm going to play. So I'd have to look at the card, decide what I wanted to do, decide where your opinions are. You know, obviously, I prefer to lean on stakes races because I feel like you have the full story about the horses. Claiming races, there's a lot of hidden stories you don't know about. So I would try to target the big races, especially on a big day. I feel like the results are a little bit more dependable.
Nick, anything to add to that about strategy for an event like the Naira contest this weekend?
Nothing really terribly significant to add. I think given the format and the amount that you're going to be working with, you probably want to fire. You know, you probably want to find an opportunity early on the card where you're going to play close to your whole bankroll in order to make an impact. It's just going to be hard betting $30 or $40 a race to really do something significant, because it's going to take a couple thousand, I would imagine, to win. So probably a good idea to find the first horse along the way that you really like and maybe bet him to win or key him in some exactas and try and zoom in on it a little bit and give yourself an opportunity to make some money.
I like that idea, and I think that's a good point about trying to bet more where you have your strongest opinion rather than sort of middling along and letting the takeout come into play by betting 30 or 40 a race and turning it over a lot of times. I think that makes a lot of sense strategically. We have another question that gets back into something we were talking about when we were talking about Battalion Runner before. Nick, I'll ask it to you. How much do you consider the trainer's decisions in where they send horses, especially when they have more than one horse, like Chad Brown looking at Practical Joke and Cloud Computing, or Pletcher or Baffert looking at their runners? How much do you take into consideration where each of their charges ends up?
You know, until told otherwise, my assumption is that Always Dreaming ran at Gulfstream last week because he's Todd Pletcher's best possibility.
Right.
That is what it shows, that he kept him at home. And given that he and Battalion Runner have common ownership, the fact that he was always looking to ship Battalion Runner is I think, that backs that up. And I also think it's a terrible sign that you have a horse like One Liner who keeps missing races. So, you know, he's, as I said before, Pletcher is one of those guys that he's not Bob Baffert. He does not wait until Wednesday of the week of the race to determine where he's going to run a horse. He makes his plans usually very early. He may look at some options. This year, obviously, his cup really runneth over, so he's got a few different things that he could do, but still, he's usually really definitive. And the Italian runner is the kind of horse I think that he hasn't really been with. He's also given him a little bit of time off. So it's there's just a few things that I don't really love the way this horse has come out of the spring. And, you know, it's one of those now, given that he has zero Derby points, where it's a total all or nothing proposition. And I would have liked to see things done with a little bit more direct, a little bit clearer direction along the way.
Looking at this situation more generally, JK, how much do you look at that? Where I think Nick has hammered the nail of the Pletcher question right on the head, but how about when it comes to Chad Brown or Baffert? How much do you look at their decisions of where to spot these horses?
Well, I think it can tell you a lot. You know, if you're paying attention, you're following along, I think you can really kind of identify some trainer intent, which I think is one of the most powerful angles in handicapping, is understanding why these guys are doing what they're doing. So, but I also think that it's a real slippery slope, and you can fall into these situations that there's so many scenarios that you completely miss the boat on what happened. You know, an owner, one of the owners in the partnership of a silent partnership lives in California, so they run the horse in California, and you think that he's dodging a horse in New York. So you got to be careful in those scenarios. I wouldn't mortgage the house to back a bet based on a trainer move, but it's definitely something that needs to be considered, and it's very important.
It's not a one size fits all proposition. I think that's a key point too. Looking at what a trainer has done in the past can offer guidance, and I think that's a great point that Nick made about there are certain trainers that circle these targets weeks or even months ahead of time versus trainers who are, and Baffert being the prime example, who really react much more spur of the moment and let the horse tell them. As you get to be more familiar with the trainers on your circuit and around the country, these are the kind of things that you'll be able to internalize and help you in your handicapping. A couple more quick ones, gentlemen, and then I'll let you get on your way today. This question came in. Of all the horses running this weekend, is there one we think will really benefit from running 10 furlongs instead of 9? JK, we'll start with you.
I would say Yeah, McCracken, I think is who I would love to see weaving through the field at Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May. But I would think McCracken.
Is there anybody who goes to your head, Nick, as someone who'll benefit as the distances get longer here?
Taprit and the J Boys Echo, to some extent, both seem to me like horses that are going to appreciate 10 furlongs. I think the Taprit especially seems to finish like a horse who will take to more ground, even though his dam side, which of course is very accomplished, a little sprinty with Appealing Zophie having been a grade one winner sprinting, but he certainly took a lot of that Taprit blood and feels like a horse that wants to go pretty much whatever distance you'll ask him, but it looks like a little bit longer the better. And the same kind of thing with J-Boy's Echo. I think the most interesting question to be asked this weekend is, will a horse like Cloud Computing, being by McLean's Music, like to go 10 furlongs? And will we get a window into that by seeing how he does that at 9 furlongs?
And certainly the visual impression horses make, the pace figures they run, those are just some of the tools we can use. We'll have a lot more information after this weekend, and we can discuss this question again as we get closer to the actual Triple Crown races. Final quick question. Nick, maybe you know the answer to this. I could hypothesize, but I'd never really thought about it before. Is there a world in which trainers would want a 10-furlong Kentucky Derby prep, or is it just too early in the year for them to attempt that distance?
You know, super interesting question. I've wondered about that in the past. And you know, with the UAE Derby being a mile and 3/16, I've often asked myself, like, you know, these horses are so up against it in terms of shipping over. And you know, it's a relatively tight turnaround at, I think, 6 weeks. But do they have an edge by having gone that trip? And would somebody be, if the track said, hey, we're going to run our prep at a mile and 3/16, would there be a bit of an advantage? And it almost makes you wonder if Naira should have considered something like that with the Wood and saying, let's differentiate ourselves from everybody else and run our prep at a mile and 3/16 or even a mile and a quarter and see if it makes a big difference. Because I think it's one of those that until you try, you really don't know. And I could actually see it being viewed somewhat favorably by the public. And I certainly have never been of the opinion that you shouldn't do something because you've never done it that way. In many cases, that's the reason why you should try something.
Very interesting. All right. Well, we'll ask a few more people that question, try to get it out there in the conversation a bit. JK, I believe you had a final thought for us before we sign off today.
Yeah, I was going to just say to Nick's question, just to piggyback that, I think it's exciting when they get in the gate and they're going a mile and a quarter for the first time. There's something about that that adds to the lure of the Derby. The other thing I wanted to point out is I was really excited. DRF Tournaments has all Keeneland tournaments. They have an all Keeneland option today for tournaments, which in the past it's always usually a mix of, you know, Gulfstream and Tampa and Santa Anita. They've got some options that are a full all Keeneland. I believe it's races 3 through 10. So that's exciting, and I'm excited about getting involved with that, and I thought others might be as well.
That's a great point. Lots of action on tournaments.drf.com this week. More qualifiers for the triple play event coming up. There's a straight Santa Anita and Del Mar qualifier on there as well. I think there might be one where you can qualify straight in to Keeneland in a couple of weeks as well. If you want to read my coverage of tournaments, check out drf.com under the tournaments dropdown. Lots of stuff up there recapping the wild stories at the Horse Player World Series. Hopefully you folks will check that out. That's all the time we have today. We're going to be leaving a little early because I got to get over and set up this webinar. Feel free to join me there and hear some of Mike Beer's thoughts on the Wood Memorial card. Looking forward to joining him on the other computer in about 12 seconds. But I want to thank Nick Tamaro. I want to thank Jonathan Kinchin, especially, as I said before, going out of your way to make this happen despite some confusion in the recording times. I'm sure you guys are going to have a great weekend at Oaklawn. Hope to hear from you again soon. Nick, we hope you'll be back on the show soon as well. Most of all, I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to this edition of the DRF Players Podcast. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, and this one was for Hogan.